The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, February 27th, 2009. This is episode number 166. We have a huge show today. We did a call with Darren Carpenter, our motorcycle racer up there in Portland, racing for the OM Racing Series, Oregon Motorcycle Road Racing Association. It's always fun talking to Darren. We cover a little tiny bit about track days. We cover a little bit of his OMRA stuff, and we talk extensively about world superbikes and MotoGP and even speed limits. It's all over the map. It was a lot of fun. And one of the nice things about talking with Darren is that it's just a little different. Jules and I, we have a great time doing our calls, but you know, there tends to be a bit of a pattern and stuff. And so every now and then throwing a call with Darren shakes things up. Only downside is that I had to talk to Darren on the phone rather than Skype to Skype. So there are always a little few quality issues because, you know, he's talking on the phone, so it sounds kind of funny, et cetera, et cetera. But whatever, it's good stuff. And we're going to get to that very, very shortly. Before we do that, it has been a huge week as far as motorcycle news. And I've only been skimming the surface. You know, I haven't had a lot of time to scour the websites and stuff, but just links that people have sent me, stuff that I have seen, et cetera, et cetera. There's been a lot of good stuff going on this weekend. So I want to talk about a few of those things before we get into the call, because these are things that we did not talk about in the call with Darren. And first of all, let's see. We are also going to have our contest winners announcement here today. We're giving away 10 licenses for Adam Kress's really, really cool app called Fast App, which is for the iPhone or iPod Touch. And I'm lucky enough to I actually purchased mine. So thank you very much, Adam. And in fact, the iPod Touch, the thing that pushed me over the edge to go ahead and just, I need one. My old iPod is really, really old. I'll finally buy one. I was kind of almost considering, you know, one of the new netbooks and stuff. And it's like, why would I buy a netbook? Let's just get an iPod Touch. It does the things that I need a little tiny portable computer to do. Plus, I can run Adam's cool Fast App application, which gives me a MotoGP calendar, a full calendar of World Superbike stuff and motorcycle racing stuff, excuse me, and also gives me the live timing of MotoGP. And Adam hopes to develop something that will do the World Superbike timing. It may be a different application. It sounded like it possibly could be in Fast App. He's not 100% sure. That's still several months out. But right now we've got something that on race weekend of MotoGP, you can get the live timing right there on your iPhone. And in between races, you've got a really cool calendar, and it's pretty slick, and it's $2.99 here in the United States. I'm not 100% sure what the pricing is overseas and everything, but it's going to be equivalent, you know, a very, very small expenditure. And we're giving away 10 licenses for it right now here tonight. 10. That's a lot. So thanks a lot, Adam. We really appreciate you sending us those. And if you're interested in Fast App, or if you have questions for Adam or anything like that, or even feedback, actually, if you've got comments and stuff about things that he could do to improve the app or suggestions or what have you, I'll tell you what, send them to me and I'll forward them on to Adam. I don't really want to just give his website out his email address out right now. So we will do it that way. So there's that one. And then let's see what else we got. Really, really super good news. Excellent news. And I first heard of this from Anthony Murphy, that Eurosport, the team of Toby Moody, Julian Ryder, and Randy Mamola is, thank God, going to continue. Okay, so British Eurosport's got a contract to do the MotoGP races. They're going to cover the Friday and Saturday practice sessions. They're going to cover the 125 and the 250 races. They're going to cover the MotoGP races, but not live. So that's the compromise that they took Eurosport, and it's going to be on a tape delay basis. So that BBC in Britain will be doing it live. The terrestrial stations in France and Germany and whatnot will be doing it live. Eurosport, it'll be on a tape delay basis for the MotoGP races. But we still have the commentary team of Toby Moody and Julian Ryder and Randy Mamola, and that's just awesome. I hadn't even seen this one sort of on the radar. I had no idea. I haven't talked to Toby for a little while. I probably should try to keep in touch with him, but you know, he's busy and everything else, so kind of lost touch. But that's just fantastic stuff. Plus, chances are he probably wouldn't have been able to tell me any details anyways, because it's all, you know, secret and stuff until it's announced. But this is on the full-on MotoGP.com website. You know, this is not a rumor. This is real. And other than the tape delay thing, which for us here in the States is very, very minor, because we don't, unfortunately, get Eurosport at all, it's awesome. This is good news, because they're such an entertaining commentary team. They're so good, so good at what they do. So good news there. And then let's see what else we got. Jim Race forwards a link that World Superbikes has got live timing. Live timing is scoring. And I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. It's on the worldsuperbike.com website, which is worldsbk.com, and then some complicated HTML-y looking stuff after that. I will put the link in the MotoGP OD. Jim says control plus or control minus, and you can watch it from 6 feet away. And on the chances are on the Macintosh, that might be command plus, but we'll find out. Whatever it is. This is cool, because we got this weekend coming up, World Superbikes, which Darren and I talk extensively about. So we definitely want to put a link to that in the show notes. Check out your timing and scoring if you're going to watch the race live. And let's see, one last email that I got that I wanted to mention, but we did not cover during our Darren call. And this is from Brandon Bashore. Brandon's got a ticket for Laguna Seca, which happens July 4th weekend there here in the United States. Laguna Seca on the July 4th weekend, you really can't go wrong. The weather's going to be wonderful. It's a holiday weekend, so, you know, that's a plus or a minus. You know, Jules is seeing it as a minus. I'm seeing it as a plus. But whatever way you look at it, it's going to be kind of cool. Brandon's got a ticket. Turn 3 suite. He cannot go this year. He needs to sell it. So if you know of anybody that would like to look at a Turn 3 suite ticket, and unfortunately I didn't get a whole lot of details of exactly what all else is all included, but Brandon's selling this. He wants to play. He only wants to sell it for what he paid for it. That's $533. If you're interested at all, again, send me an email. Make sure that, you know, subject says, I want the ticket or whatever, something along those lines, and I'll forward it on to Brandon, put you guys in touch, and you can negotiate the deal. So I told Brandon that I'd try to help him out, and I think that'd be great. If anybody out there, MotoGP OD listener, is interested in one Turn 3 suite ticket for Laguna Seca, Brandon's got one there for you to be interested in. Let's see. Other than that, I think that we cover everything in the call with Darren, everything that I wanted, really, really wanted to cover. So why don't we just go ahead and jump right on in? So we got Darren on the phone today. How you doing today, Darren?
I'm doing good.
Good, good, cool. We are going to talk about the stuff we always talk about with Darren, which we want to talk a little bit about club racing, of course. And then there's some exciting stuff going on, MotoGP. And, of course, we got World Supers coming up, too, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
This weekend is World Superbikes, the first race of the season. I can't wait. It's really getting me fired up. You always like to see the first one.
Yeah, exactly. I am pretty excited myself, so hopefully that'll be a good Sunday. I haven't even checked the TV schedule. Is Speed showing like all the races on Sunday? Do you know? Have you seen that or not?
Well, unfortunately, I think I looked at the Speed schedule, and they're showing just race one, World Superbike, and they're showing it on West Coast time at 1 p.m.
Okay. And then race two will show up like on Wednesday or something like that. Like they do.
Yes. Yeah. It kills me.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. I mean, I guess I can understand it from a programming point of view. Once you're in the really midst of the season and you've got MotoGP and World Supers and even maybe AMA, you know, all mixing into the mix and stuff. But, you know, come on. When, you know, especially when what they're going to run this weekend is, I don't know, some of their usual crap. So
yeah.
This is my semi-annual Speed rant.
Yes. I know. Well, the thing that's just so frustrating with Speed is they have, you know, if somebody who was an enthusiast, a racing enthusiast, was in charge of that channel, they could just do an awesome job. But it's Fox and Murdoch, and they just are worried about the dollars, and they know they can make more money on something else. It's just ridiculous, and so it just kills me.
Yeah.
It also kills me because if they actually did kind of try to promote the sports, you know, across the whole spectrum, more people would get interested. They would, you know, like if they could show motorcycle racing more often, I think they could do a better job of promoting it in the States. You're going to build viewership at that point and make it into the next like NASCAR or whatever. But
it would take an investment, and it's, yeah, exactly. It wouldn't be an easy overnight thing. And no. I, you know, If Dorna is not willing to spend the money to do it themselves, then Speed is not gonna, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yep.
But yeah, I long for the days when it was Speed Vision, because then it was run by racing enthusiasts and it was quite a bit different.
Yep. So. No, it was good. But anyway.
Yeah, like I said, semi-annual speed rant. So, speaking of speed out there on the track, you're racing this season, right?
I am racing this season, and I wanted to put a plug out there to R&D Machine. They are sponsoring me this year. My title sponsor is Vicious Cycle, and so they're doing a great job as well. But R&D Machine's really helping me build this superbike. It started off as a Suzuki SV650, and I don't have the budget to be able to do the whole bike at one time. So right now we're just doing the chassis, and I'm just saving money up over the summer, and maybe in the fall I'll do the motor. But yeah, they've been helping me out. The main goal for right now is to drop as much weight off the bike as possible. And R&D machines, you know, if you have your own CNC machine and all the equipment, it's just amazing what you can do. And I sent you a photo. I asked you if you maybe could put it up on your web, but it's an example of some of the stuff that he's doing. And he can take a rear brake rotor, which, you know, really in the whole scheme of things doesn't weigh that much. I think the stock, you know, rear brake rotor is like a pound and a half. I don't use the rear brake, though, when I race, and a lot of people don't use the rear brake when they race. And so, you know, we're just trying to, it would be like if you could just take everything apart and put it back together and take every piece and say, what could we do to this piece and make it lighter? And that's what he did with that rear brake rotor. And, you know, it dropped up off about 40%, maybe 50% of the weight.
Wow, it is. It's impressive looking too. So it looks good and it saves weight, and that's kind of cool. And it is the whole thing like that is such a game of inches. You know, you got to shave a gram here and there and everywhere. And I mean, if you can take off these tiny amounts, the next thing you know, it really starts adding up. So
right, and you know, especially with the SV650, it doesn't. You know, you get the really big bikes, the 1000cc bikes. They've got so much power that, you know, if you drop in half a pound here, it's not that big of a deal. They just can make up for it. But the Suzuki, the 650 just doesn't have that kind of horsepower. So weight makes a bigger difference.
That's a good point. Yeah. And it's an excellent all-around bike, the 650. But I really enjoy mine a lot. But it's, yeah, I can see what you're saying there. It is a little short on power compared to a bigger bike.
But the owner of the R&D shop, the bike he's working on right now is the one that I want to see weighed when it's finished. He got a Ducati 848 off of a salvage auction, and it's at his shop. And, you know, because of the economy and the times are a little bit slow right now, so he's had some time to work on it. And if you can imagine, you know, he's just torn that whole thing apart. And, you know, he was showing me, you know, if you see, like, you know, bolts that are like 2 inches long that help hold the, you know, chassis together, the rear, you know, subframe and things like that on the bike, there's, you know, they're a substantial bolt. It's like, well, you know, if you make that out of titanium, you're dropping a little bit of weight. So he's made all these bolts. They always try to go as light as possible. So a lot of them they do out of aluminum, but he does stress tests so he knows how much stress they're going to need. If the aluminum's not going to be strong enough, then they'll use titanium. And he's putting his bike back together, and I can only imagine all the stuff he's done to it, what it's going to be. I don't even know how much it's going to weigh, like less than 300 pounds for sure.
Wow. Is titanium heavier than aluminum?
Titanium is heavier than aluminum, but it's obviously stronger. You know,
right, a lot stronger. Steel.
So there are certain things that you need the strength for. You can't, you know, you can't sacrifice it. Aluminum is the choice because it's the lightest. So certain things like the rear subframe, which is a steel, you know, part off a normal bike, a stock bike, that doesn't really need to support that much. You know, you don't really sit on the back of the, you know, rear subframe. That's really just there to kind of hold together some wiring and to kind of give you a support over the exhaust and over the rear tire. Your seat is actually just on the frame between the tank and the rear subframe. So you can make that out of aluminum. It's, you know, strong enough for that.
Right. And yeah, and save a fair amount of weight. So, but right. You also increase the cost. You know, aluminum costs more than the tubular steel that they use in the SVs, and on those parts at least. Although, is the subframe? I don't think the subframe's aluminum on a stock SV. No. So.
No, a stock SV, they're steel.
Yeah. And even on an 848. Well, interesting. So, good stuff. And you are. Yeah, I remember we did talk about this the last time we spoke. That the classes that you're racing in. When's your first race with OMRA?
The first race is April 11th. That is Easter weekend. And so Easter's Sunday, so we're not racing on Sunday. We're racing the day before on Saturday.
April 12th is Easter? I didn't even know that, because that's the opening round in Qatar of MotoGP. Is it not?
I believe so.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, maybe I'll try to come up. That's a long way away. I can't make any rash promises, but that would be really cool. Come up and go to Kelly's O to watch the race, which I saw that Dave Sangster, longtime friend of MotoGPOD, sent out an email about organizing a thing to go this weekend to Kelly's O in Portland to watch World Superbikes. So any of you listeners out there that are in the Northwest or something, it's a great bar. It's a bar. Well, yeah, I guess it's a bar and grill, whatever you want to call it. They got good food, great burgers, you know, nice beer, and a huge TV where they show a lot of motorcycle racing. And yeah. And motorcycles hanging from the ceiling by what looks like twine, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, they're right over your head, and you often look up and question just how long that twine has been there.
I think this is a bar that's serving food, so I don't really like to think about this, but I think it was steel cable that was covered in so much cobwebs and fuzz that it looked like, you know, string, but it really looked a lot like just little thin rope. So I don't know. But in any case, no, Kelly's O is a good place. And unfortunately, I really doubt I'm going to be able to make it up there this weekend. I really kind of thought about it and stuff, but I've got so much stuff going on. But yeah, I'd like to do it for MotoGP weekend.
It's like a two-hour drive, isn't it, for you?
It's three hours, yeah. And so, you know, you figure, and realistically, who's going to go to a bar on Sunday and watch MotoGP and everything? Then I'll have a couple of beers and all of that. And so then I have to either wait to go home, you know, to make sure I'm not driving drunk or stay the night Sunday night in Portland. You know, next thing you know, it comes a big ordeal. So,
right.
Yeah, so a bit of a shame. But are you going to go?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This weekend, for sure.
Yeah.
It should be a fun time. And, you know, you're going to watch motorcycle racing. You need to watch it in a bar that has motorcycles hanging from the ceiling covered with cobwebs. And
Kelly's O is an awesome place. So, if you're anybody that's out there, if you're listening, go in. Hopefully you can pick Darren out of the crowd. Darren, Darren looks like Darren. So actually, I think there's some pictures on our website of you. He's got glasses. So, but there'll be a big group of guys and everything, and just go up to people and say, "Hey, are you Darren?" But whatever.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Any other stuff on the club racing track day sort of circuit? I know you and Fergus have been talking about planning the track days a little bit for next year, starting to just kind of. You know, Fergus is very, very excited. I haven't even really started getting to the point of looking at the calendar yet.
Well, what I would suggest for you, Bob, and everybody else out there is to, you know, sit down and kind of look at the calendar and try to plan out your year. You know, if you can only do three track days, well, then just sit down and see, like, what are the three track days that will fit around your schedule. And, you know, that way you can kind of just stock the money away, and you can also plan for it. And you can, you know, that way you can have a little bit of a schedule, you know, that you're going to be doing, you know, using the bike on, you know, whatever May 15th or whatever day it happens to be. You can plan to get the bike ready, you know, before that, you know, just kind of go through the year. The more track days you do, you know, it's, you know, the more kind of planning you need to do anyway. So
right, exactly. And one thing that we brought up in you and I and Ferguson, some of our emails, is that it's not, you know, I don't think PSSR is in this situation. I certainly hope not, but maybe some of the smaller, newer track day organizations, they may be on a little tiny bit of a shaky financial ground. So even though you might get a big discount to sign up for a whole bunch of days in advance, you might want to give it a second thought in today's economy. It might not be worth it. Because if that track day organization happens to go broke before your track day comes up, you're not getting your money back.
Right, and we say that because of the Freddie Spencer. They went under, and so there were
exactly.
several people.
And that was not a new or little organization. You know, that was a fairly big show. You know, apparently there may have been some irregularities all along, but in any case, it's not the company that you expect to go broke.
Yeah, and when you say irregularities, I never suspected that he was doing anything mischievous.
No, I didn't mean that. Just a bit flaky is a better way to put it. Yeah.
Right. I mean, some people that are good at racers but aren't good business managers, and I think he's probably one of those.
Right, right. And I wasn't even so much directly, you know, finger-pointing at Freddie Spencer, although I suppose somebody's got to take the heat. Just the way that, you know, the whole company was managed and all of that. So right. A little backpedaling there. I don't want a bunch of hate mail from Freddie Spencer fans. So.
And we're all guesses. This is all guesses as well. We're just, we don't
it's
know
it's
for
true.
Sure
yeah,
about
exactly.
It.
We're just making it up as we go along, which is what we do here on MotoGPOD. Well, all right. moving along.
So let's talk a little bit about MotoGP.
Let's. So I've got a few things, and we shared some email links and whatnot. First thing, let me cover real quick. I got an email from Tim Bennett, and this is about Jules and my call, which was last week, where we were talking about the new rules. And Tim says, "Hi, Bob. I guess you're getting this from plenty of people, but I read the brake rules totally differently than you and Jules did. The newly announced rule bans ceramic composite brakes, not carbon brakes. Ceramic brakes are a whole different ballgame, and you can buy them for your street bike right now if you had $1,000 a disc to spend. From what I read, they offer almost carbon performance, but without all the annoying things that keep carbon brakes off the street. And as such, I cannot imagine why Dorna would want to ban them, because they offer almost carbon performance at such a fraction of the price. So in short, I think that we will see carbon brakes next year, but they may get banned in the future. And if they do, I hope they will legalize ceramic discs so that they get better developed, and maybe someday we'll see them on street bikes." And good call, Tim. Sorry. I was not sure what I was thinking on that all thing. You know, Jules read the rule and everything, and I was like, do they mean carbon? And we just sort of ran with it. And I kind of edited the show up a bit, and I even said something in the intro. But basically on that whole one, I completely dropped the ball and was totally confused as to what we were talking about. But and I totally agree with Tim, though, that this is where my whole thing about racing's responsibility to develop a better machine for us it certainly comes into play. And if there's something that would work on the street, that's what should be, you know, on these motorcycles, so that then we eventually see it on these motorcycles.
Right. And I mean, when the rules came out and they listed ceramic brakes, it kind of surprised me. I've never heard of ceramic brakes before, first of all, and I'm not sure if that's just because I just fell off a turnip truck or what.
But I'm glad I'm not the only one.
But I've heard of carbon brakes, and there was some news about the carbon brakes. And there was even, I thought I read somewhere, one team manager said that he was kind of, you know, pro getting rid of carbon brakes, wasn't saying that he was for it, but he did say that would save money, because I think he said they spent something like $250,000 a year on carbon, you know.
I wouldn't be surprised. They're very expensive.
So, sure, if you say, no, you can only use just whatever steel or whatever's out for the available public, that would cut out that big, huge cost. But then the rule came out, and it was for ceramic. So then I was like, "That I don't understand that at all." The only thing I could think was that maybe there was people were starting to think there was a potential with ceramic brakes that would make them better in some way than the carbon brakes, but that would take R&D development, and that would cost money, and so they were just saying, you know, even before we even start going down that road, let's just stop it.
Yeah.
For the purpose of saving money.
Yeah, and that makes sense, you know, from your side of what you're saying there does make sense that might be the reason and everything. It's a little bit strange, though, that if Tim's right, and the ceramic brakes cost so much less, you know, once they've been more or less developed, because, you know, there is still going to be development money when you put this on a prototype bike. But, you know, say the street stock type part, you know, the part that you could go by, is that much less than a carbon brake. You're going to recoup that money very, very quickly. If you're spending $250,000 a year on brake pads and discs, if you're using carbon, and like I said, I would not be surprised if it's at least that much. But then you can spend call it a fifth as much, $50,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. That's $200,000. You know, that's right. That right there is a fair amount of R&D and
per team.
You know, you could recoup that.
That's per team.
Right, per team.
Yeah, I mean, that's not what MotoGP, the whole paddock, spends a year.
No, per team.
No, per team.
And so, that's a substantial savings.
Exactly.
You know, the one thing about that, I would be, you were talking last week with Jules about it and kind of went back and forth on what you thought as far as carbon brakes. I would be for, I think me and Jules agree on this, for development of brakes that they can use in wet and in dry. The fact that they can't use carbon in the wet means that you'll never see those on the street. And so my preference would be that whatever they have to use it in the wet or dry. Maybe the rule would be you can't change your brake, you know, brake component because of weather. I'm not sure how you'd write that, but
just like that.
But that would cost money to develop it out for sure. I'm not talking about saving money, but I'm just talking about development in general.
Right, right. No, I think that makes a lot of sense too. And the other big thing about carbon brakes is that they have to be so hot to work. And just like a racing tire, you know, if you're riding that hard on the street that you're heating up a race tire, then you're just, it's too, it, that is dangerous, you know, and same thing with the brakes.
Right.
So, right. Okay. Moving on. What were some of the topics that we were sharing earlier that look really super interesting? Marco Melandri, that news story popped, that was either today or yesterday that hit, that Melandri's going to be riding on a one rider team Kawasaki.
Yes. And the news kind of broke, you know, a little bit, you know, every few hours, it seemed like, because first he said he was going to do some testing, and depending on how he tested, he was going to race it. And then I think he came back later and said, I'm going to race this bike, all, you know, for the year. So, they've announced it, and we'll see how he does.
Right. And it's, I'm reading the one story that I have, which is actually, it was from like this morning, so there's probably newer news out here. Because this is actually on the KawasakiRacingTeam.eu website, which is good that the team is putting this on their official site. That makes it a little more solid than this is, you know, it's not like this is something we've read in Crash.net or some of the Spanish newspapers that tend to be a little, you know, rumory. I'm still, though, I'll believe it when I see it. Just a little time, just because this whole Kawasaki thing has been such a mishmash.
I think it's going to happen, but you know, I think there was a lot of arm twisting.
Because
there was so much arm twisting, it leads me to think that there was something about 18 bikes on the grid. Like there was some rumor about that in the very beginning, how there was only 17 bikes, and does that make it a world championship race or a class race or what it is? And I didn't really play into that too much because I kind of figured they could do whatever they want, really. But the amount of effort that Dornos put in to getting Melandri on a bike and on the grid makes me think that there must be something to that.
Yeah, I think, and I couldn't, I looked through the rules. I didn't do a complete, thorough, full-on read, but I really gave a good, hard look at the rules, and I couldn't find anything. But what I recall reading somewhere was that 15 is the rock bottom limit that it is no longer considered a Grand Prix race. It becomes a cup race. But then we started discussing 18, and we figured that Dorna had some deals with various broadcasters around the world that they would always have 18. And that makes a lot of sense, where it's kind of a deal that is not necessarily public. You know, this is in some confidential contract, and Dorna goes into panic mode. And it's like, we've got to get that motorcycle out there. I could see that.
And, you know, it's funny because the choice of Melandri is pretty obvious. They needed the Italian rider more than they needed Hopper as the American. They've already got several American riders. But just generally speaking, I think the better choice between the two would have been Hopper, because from the experience, Hopper's always given the impression that he is really trying hard. And a lot of the races where he's had a success, it looks like he's overriding the bike, like he's doing better than that bike should do.
I agree.
And Melandri hasn't had that same kind of pass. I mean, he has had some good races. He's won 5 races, but he's had a lot of races that it just looked like he never even, like he didn't have a good practice, didn't have good qualifying, and never gave it a shot and was finishing outside the top 10. Not that Hopper hasn't done that either, but it just looked like Melandri. And then also last year with him on the Ducati, and towards the middle of the season, it doesn't even look like he cared anymore. And from what he was posting up and saying in the public, it didn't seem like he cared.
Yeah, I agree a little bit. And, you know, though, it might have also been, though, because this is one thing that concerns me. And this particular press release on the Kawasaki Racing site doesn't say who's running the team. But one thing that we kind of gathered from the whole Kawasaki debacle of a month and a half ago was that it was like, Kawasaki is not – the factory is not going to be spending any more money developing this motorcycle. And if that is still the case, if Marco Melandri is going out there on the 2008 Kawasaki bike and racing against teams that are still spending money, maybe less money but some money, they're still spending money to develop their bikes, then he's basically screwed out of the gate. And that – you know, Hopper might have, if, you know, here's a scenario that it was offered to Hopper and Hopper realized this and said, forget it, because he doesn't want to be last all the time.
I wouldn't be surprised if Dorna said to Melandri, look, you do this favor for us and we'll get you a ride the following year or we'll keep you, at, you know, as best we can in MotoGP.
Wow.
I don't think they would have offered it to Hopper, just because I don't think he's needed in the sport as much as I think Melandri's needed a little bit more.
Okay. Wow. You're getting in deep into the conspiracy theories. This is fun, Darren. So
I just think that, because you're right. I mean, he's going to be going around at the back of the pack, and he's, you know, I mean, the best he can do this year is impress people by finishing 13th.
That's harsh, but true. And I think, you know, like if he pulls off a top 10 finish when more than 10 riders finish, that will be like, you know, wow, this guy's the Greek god of motorcycle racing. So
they'll be like, he's coming back. He's on an old bike. He's on uncompetitive bike. It was doing worse, you know, without, the year before, and it's the same bike as the year before. So yeah, if he can finish anywhere, they're going to be like, that's pretty impressive. And then, you know, that'll help him out going forward the following year.
More on Melandri, did you see the web stories where he's been racing in Qatar in what was it called? It's called it's called Speedcar. Speedcar series is confirmed. Marco Melandri's participation, blah, blah, blah. He, let's see. It doesn't, how many guys we got? It looks
like a rally.
No, it's on a track. It looks like it's at LaSalle. It was under the lights even. MotoGP star Marco Melandri came within four laps of a shock Speedcar series victory. This is actually from race two, but a mechanical failure took him out. No, excuse me. This is from race one in Qatar. Melandri started the race from pole position, built up a 7.5 second lead, blah, blah, blah. And, Vittorio Liuzzi, ended up winning. And that's another, motorcycle rider. Where have I heard his name? Liuzzi. I know that name. Is he World Superbike?
What's the last name?
Liuzzi, Liuzzi. Vittorio Liuzzi. Yeah, it's,
we need Jules for that question.
Jules would know that question, but I know the guy's name. But in any case, Speedcar is an on-track road racing series of sort of some kind of, you know, race car, and they were in Qatar, and Marco Melandri qualified for pole for the first race, and I think he was on fourth for the second race. And apparently he's confirmed that he's going to be coming back for their next race in Dubai. Yeah, so good stuff. You know, at least he's staying out there, and it's kind of interesting. And he says,
And I wouldn't be surprised if either the series or somebody that has a team there, you know, maybe they got into a situation where they needed a driver. You know, all of a sudden, maybe their guy got sick. And Marco's, you know, a name. People know him from MotoGP. He's very popular in Europe, so that's going to make the news. So I'm sure it's a benefit to them to have Marco come in and do some races.
Sure.
And I'm sure it's a fun ride, so why not?
Yeah, why not? I didn't. These stories, unfortunately, don't say anything about what the cars, you know, what is a speed car. And I didn't look it up, which I probably should have if I was, like, you know, kind of a prepared podcaster and stuff. But, they look a little bit like a sort of a NASCAR-y kind of car, you know, where it's a custom frame with a body that it looks like a stock car, but it's not actually a real car. You know what I mean?
It's not open wheel.
Oh, no, it's not open wheel. Definitely. They're sedans. And it's, you know, and they have the look also, though, that the body is not the actual body that of the car that you would buy. You know what I'm saying? Like a rally car. Those are...
Right.
Although, yes, granted, they've spent, you know, $1 million on this car. It started off life as something very, very similar to something that you could go buy. But whereas these ones look like, you know, a tube frame with a skin on. I might be wrong. I don't know. I'll have to look it up just out of general interest. So good for Marco. Good for Liuzzi. And that's going to drive me nuts, too. I know the name. And let's see. What do we got?
You had two other emails, I think, asking about Hopper and wanted to know. I think there's been some question, as I've read on the boards, as far as what's going to happen with Hopper this year. And I just don't think he has any options. I mean, he found out at the last moment, almost at the end of the year, that he didn't have a ride. All the other good rides were taken. you know, that if he really was desperate and he had to race somewhere, I'm sure he could get a ride in a World Superbike, but it wouldn't be on a factory team.
No, he might be stepping way, 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 way down. And actually, Jules and I mentioned this, that, you know, if he takes a job somewhere else, he's probably going to be losing money from the Kawasaki contract. And
yeah,
and not exactly. To knock Hopper and everything, but I mean, come on, you've got, you know, giant bags of money, or go ride on an uncompetitive bike that, compared to what you have been riding, this uncompetitive bike is slow and heavy.
Well, and that's the thing. If he did that, if he went to World Superbike on some uncompetitive ride, he's going to have less credibility the next year, because he's not going to be finishing in the top 10. He's going to, you know, fall out of the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's also risking injury. And the other thing is, if somebody does get injured in MotoGP, he's basically the first guy in line. I mean, he's got the experience. He could easily jump on any of those bikes, you know, as a replacement rider,
right,
and do fine.
And bring also to the table, you know, sponsorship money and a fan base. And he's got kind of the Anglo-American thing going on. You know, there's a lot that John Hopkins can bring to a team. He's got star value. How does that sound?
He's got star value. His wife's pretty good looking as well.
Yeah, she's kind of hot. And
I think we'll see him somewhere next year. I don't know if he'll be back in MotoGP. I think next year he's going to have to. You know, he has a year basically to talk to all the teams out there and figure out what is going to be his best situation for, you know, the going forward.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he went to World Superbike. I don't know if he'll be able to get a ride in MotoGP, but I wouldn't be too surprised if he did either.
Right, but even if he could get on a competitive World Superbike ride, I mean, World Superbike's starting to look like the place to be. And we're going to get to World Superbike here in a minute, because we're starting to run a little long already. But that's okay. One of those emails did mention the rumors about, let's see, it was from Samuel Dixon. And he says, you know, now we know Marco Melange is going to be riding the Kawasaki. What does that mean for Hopkins? Will he be taking the year off, or is there any validity to the rumor that he may ride in World Superbike? And I got to admit, I haven't seen that rumor. So
I thought I saw something about him being in either world. It was for a privateer team, and it was quickly squashed like a few days after it came out.
Really?
So
okay.
I don't think – I haven't heard any credible thing, and the one rumor I did hear got squashed like 2 days later.
Okay, and that was a little while ago, wasn't it? I mean –
Yeah.
So I think I did see that one. I haven't seen anything recently that that he's going to be coming out and kind of it might be, who knows, maybe it's a no news is good news thing for him. Like you say, the injury, actually, that makes a lot of sense that maybe he, you know, some time off, because he had a bad time as far as injuries recently. So maybe he can get fit and rested.
It'll give him a year to rest up. It'll give him a year to, you know, I'm sure he's not going to be not riding. He'll be, I think he does supermoto stuff and he does dirt bike riding. He's got a house out in the country in California somewhere.
Right.
So, you know.
As long as he keeps training and all of that, he'll be fine. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's that one. Let's see if there's any of these other emails that are super interesting to touch on. One thing, and you sent me this link and I read it, was the Red Bull news about Nicky Hayden is not going to be wearing his I don't have the website in front of me, so I'm throwing it off the top of my head, but Nicky Hayden's not going to be having the Red Bull stuff, the sponsorship anymore. He can't have the bull and the suns on his helmet because and one of the things they said was that because of that his new team Ducati has some kind of conflicting sponsorship, and I was thinking, you know, well, what sponsorship is that? Because I looked and I even went to the website and I started looking at pictures of bikes. It's like, is there a sponsor that I missed? I didn't see anything that I recognized as something that would really be a sponsor with a competitor with Red Bull.
Maybe they have a new sponsor.
Yeah, that's a possibility too, I suppose. But you know, and it's all secretive and stuff that this email coming. Hayden's move from Honda to Ducati has created a situation not allow Red Bull to continue the branding relationship. Blah blah blah. He won't have the bulls and sun on his helmet. He will not be representing the brand. His new team has an existing relationship that prevented the branding to continue. We'll continue to stay close to Nicky and hope that things change. Wish him the best. Blah blah blah. And James Toslin, Tech 3 Yamaha has a team sponsorship deal that will prevent him from wearing the Red Bull helmet in 2009, which is also interesting. The only example I could think of from Ducati that might compete with Red Bull was Marlboro, as far as a sort of a, you know, something that gives you a little kick in the pants now and then when you need it. But so that's I love making jokes about Marlboro and stuff, and I'm a smoker, folks. I gotta admit, you probably can tell from my voice, but it's like, you know, come on. I want to see a track runner wearing a Marlboro shirt.
Oh, that's funny.
It's, yeah, it's awesome. You know, yeah, liquor and cigarettes. This is what sponsors are racing.
Yep.
I mean, gosh, not that Red Bull's any better anymore. You hear about these kids, you know, drinking 12 cans of Monster a day and stuff and having a heart attack, you know, 12-year-old. So,
yeah, kids these days, what are you going to do?
Yeah, yep, that's right. So... here in Oregon, we got them protected, though. We don't allow vending machines in the schools anymore, including even in the teacher's lounge.
So, oh, right. That's funny.
Yeah. All right.
Let's talk about the World Superbike.
Let's talk about World Superbikes. I think we've covered enough of the stuff. There's still some interesting news and everything else, but let's go on to World Superbikes.
Now, I don't have much information. I do have the free pack, you know, because of our MotoGP time machine, we already have the times from Friday and free practice session one, and we can go down the list. I haven't really been tracking too much of the what's been happening in the practice sessions leading up to this weekend, just because I really don't give any of those times and all that stuff any kind of credibility. I don't really start paying attention until they get to the first race and start doing some practicing.
Exactly. You're talking about last week's test sessions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much sandbagging going on there, but you know, it was interesting news, but it was also, it's like, you know, hey, the factory PR people are putting it out, so they're going to make it sound interesting no matter what. And maybe it's because, you know, this is the first good stuff after a couple of months of nothing, you know, that we've heard. So,
well, and plus, you know, really, these teams are developing the bike, so they're doing testing, and, you know, they're doing lots of different things. They're not going out every session and just seeing how fast they can go. Like, you're not going to make progress that way.
Right. So. You try something new, and it's like, well, that didn't work, you know, et cetera. Yeah. And, but there were some results that we discussed briefly before the show, and I want you to say it again, of what are these times like on this first free practice day out there in at Phillip Island, Darren?
Well, you know, we've got for first place in the first free practice session one was Ben Spies on the Yamaha. And second place was Noah Kircher. I'm not sure he got it.
Noah Kircher, yeah.
And third on the Honda was Hossium, Great Britain. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name either.
Yeah. Was Haslam or?
Haslam.
Yeah, okay. Haslam, yeah.
But you figured now you've got three different manufacturers in the top three. We've got four different manufacturers in the top five. The Spies time was a 132.7, and if you look down the charts to just 1 second, which would be 13th place.
Wow.
And that's Sykes on the Yamaha.
Sykes is in 13th? Okay.
And 12th was Johnny Ray. So
wow.
There's people in 12th and 13th place are not, you know, slow guys.
No, they're 1 second off the pace. So
they're 1 second off. So we've got a blanket covering the top 13.
Yeah. That's and I mean, now, you know, granted it's practice, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But still that's impressive. These guys are close.
If you go down to the top, to the 20th person, so the top 20 are actually separated by less than a second and a half.
That's amazing. Wow. how many guys have they got out there on the practice day? Is it the 30s?
The first sheet it only lists here is 28, so I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure. I know that they had a list, a roster of like 35 bikes this year, so I'm not sure if these times...
They might have just cut it off. Today. Yeah.
Or if it just cut off.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we've got a lot of people really bunched up, and we've got a good mix of people. And you really, looking down this list, you just, it's, you know, it's up in the air. Haga was six.
I was going to say, where's Haga? My guy Haga, yeah.
And, Fabricio is eighth. Nakana is seventh. So, I mean, these are big-name people. Now, some things we can look at is it doesn't look like the Kawasaki is doing very good. The first Kawasaki is 14th place, and that's Tomato.
Yeah.
So,
now,
and then if you go,
refresh my memory, I don't think Kawasaki wasn't doing all that great in World Supers last year, were they? I mean,
no,
they were
they
okay.
But... I correct that. The first Kawasaki is Parks. And he's in 10th.
Okay. Josh Parks. Cool.
Yep.
So
no, not Josh. Bolt was the starts with a B.
Oh, Bolt. Brock. No, no, it's not.
Brock.
Is it Brock?
Okay. I'm guessing. I don't know.
This is bad. Forget it. Whatever. B Parks. Hi, B. How are you doing? I love being a prepared podcaster.
Something else we can notice from this is it doesn't look like the BMW is doing too good. The Corsair is 20th and Zaus is 21st.
No real big surprise there, honestly. I mean, you know, I wouldn't expect them to come out of the gate and be in the top 10 or anything.
I wouldn't either. I mean, this is their first. When was the last time they were even in racing?
This kind of racing, I mean, road racing, obviously they do the rallies heavily, but yeah, road racing, it might be the 50s. I mean, this is a question that Jules would know. Except for like the BMW Boxer Cup and stuff. But
they do some cup racing,
yeah,
sure.
But those are that's a little different because it's spec racing and stuff. And, they're good bikes. But once you take the saddlebags off of BMW, that thing will go. No, I think it's super exciting that BMW's in World Super Dupers. And what about, don't we have, who's the other
Aprilia
new guys this year?
So the first Aprilia is 7th place, and that's Nakano.
Okay.
Nakano. And unfortunately, Biaggi is all the way down in 17th place. So I don't know if that's just first day practice. Maybe they got some setup to do. Who knows? I hope, I would really like to see Biaggi up higher. But also, right behind Biaggi is Shane Burns on the Ducati and Carlos Checa on the Honda. So, that's his first day practice. And like I said, there's just so many names that any one of these guys could be fighting for a podium finish.
Right. And this is Friday practice on the first race of the season. It's going to be a muddle. So, I can't wait for race day. It's going to be interesting to sort of see what happens. And World Supers has been some just solid quality racing. If you like, because I do like seeing it where the close racing and you just see, Haga, Nitro Nori, well named, just doing this crazy stuff. And all these other guys, it's good racing. We've had this discussion before that there's something about it that it just doesn't quite excite me as much as MotoGP, even though it probably should on paper and all of that. But it just, but I'm going to be watching this weekend for sure.
Yeah, it should be fun. And, Ben Spies, we'll talk a little about him. He's on the pole, I guess, if you would say. He's at the top of the charts for free practice.
I think that's quite significant.
Yeah, he's really looking hot. And so I think he's going to be hard to beat this year. I'm not saying that he's going to be winning races every weekend, but I think he's going to be fighting for the podium. It looks like so far he's been showing like he's been really strong. So
yeah, he's been the only guy in the last few years that's been able to give Matt Mladen a run for his money in American, AMA Supers. And I mean, some of those races were hard fought battles. I think that. Go ahead. Sorry.
The one thing about Spies and Mladen, when they raced, there was hardly ever a full race battle. Every time they raced for the last 2 years, one of them would have a better setup.
One of them would break away. Yeah.
And would break away. And there were occasions where one of them would get out in front, and at about maybe halfway through the race, the other one would catch back up and make a pass, and you're thinking, okay, now it's on. But what would happen is that person would just pull away.
Yeah.
So there was never a lot of really close elbow-to-elbow, passing lap every lap between the two.
Not lap every lap, maybe, but I seem to remember, and I wasn't paying close enough attention that I can throw out, tracks and all of that, but I seem to remember a couple of surprises. But you're right, those might have been more that's why I'm remembering them. They were a little bit surprises. So I'll have to check into that. And who knows what's going on still with AMA this year, honestly. I'm sure there have been some news stories and stuff, but frankly, I kind of stopped paying attention because I got just discouraged. And it's just like, I don't know, this weird political thing that just bothers me. So
yeah, it's interesting with AMA because it's almost like you're looking at AMA from the TV down, and I'm looking at AMA this year from the club racer up. So for me, it's actually a little bit more interesting because I know a few club racers who are now going to go to the AMA because they think because of the new format, they're going to have a better chance to get some exposure and to do a little bit better. So I'm interested to see how they do. So there's some people that I have, you know about or read about that are moving around, and that's what I'm really going to be paying attention to. You're right, though, as far as the big factory teams, you know, who knows what's going to be happening there. And as far as what the show is, you know, it all depends on how they present it on TV. And if they do a good job and they present it well, then it's going to build viewership and the sport will come back. And I don't think it's going away, but it depends on how they do it. If they don't do it right, then it's just going to flounder for the next few years.
And actually, I love that way that you put that, that I'm looking at it from TV down and you're looking at it from Club Racer up. That is so true. And granted, it is. It's giving these guys an opportunity to move up into the spotlight, say, right? But I'm just right. And here's my glasses half full view is that, well, yeah, now the spotlight is this, like, you know, 40-watt bulb. And so that concerns me. And I'm not knocking those guys' as, you know, achievements or what have you, and I wish them best of luck. But it's just like, you know, they took a – I think American road racing has always been a little tiny bit of a – kind of like, well, we kind of have to do it, don't we? You know, so, you know, we'll sort of set up this track at a Roval, you know, with hay bales, literally hay bales and stuff like that. You know, so it's always a bit of an afterthought for racing in America, but it still sells a lot of motorcycles and it does create some real genuine heroes and it can be very entertaining, you know, on the right venue and this and that. And I'm just hoping that, you know, I hope we don't see a lot more hay bales. How does that sound?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, unfortunately, there's really only a handful of tracks in the U.S. that could be considered world-class tracks.
Right, maybe six.
And the rest of them are inside of, you know, ovals, you know, around hay bales and around...
Right, or road courses that are substandard. I mean, you know, there's some good road courses here, especially now, you know, with Miller and to Barber. Barber's a little short, but it's still, you know, it's a beautiful circuit. And even you know, Road America is awesome, and VIR, you know.
Laguna Seca. I probably should have
mentioned that one. But even Laguna Seca, from world standards, Laguna Seca is still a little bit primitive. You know, not enough runoff.
It has charm.
It does have charm, yes. But but yeah, you're right. You know, so but the grand scheme of things, once you put together a full calendar of AMA races, and these have to be races that are at circuits where you're going to get people to actually go, and, you know, so they're close enough to the population centers or whatever that is that you're looking for, and et cetera, the next thing you know, that they've included a bunch of these rovals. And, you know, like the classic example for me, and thankfully they got rid of it a couple years ago, was Pikes Peak. And it's just like, this is the biggest piece of crap I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, now I think that award would go to Fontucky. But it's such a big venue at, what is that, California Speedway is the official name, right? Down there in Fontana. It, you know, it's such a huge venue that you really have to have a race there. But in effect, it turns into guys on really super fast motorcycles in a parking lot with hay bales and cones, you know? And,
well, you can even say that arguably the biggest race, the Daytona 200.
Yeah.
That's an awful track.
Yeah, it's horrible. And yeah, dangerous too. And,
none of the racers like it. I mean, it's just an awful track. I mean, that's the problems they have at that track, because they try to put that race on there. One, they can't use the big bikes anymore. They can't use the 1,000cc machines because of that oval and the banking. You just bury those tires. You just, you know, blow them apart.
Right. And if AMA was going to be okay, this is a little bit like the Speed TV thing, where and I understand why AMA cannot do this. So I'm not sort of living in some fantasy world, but if AMA was only going to race at real road courses and this and that, and even, you know, in population centers, then why don't they race in Portland? Okay, granted, it's not the best road course in the world, but it is a road course, and it's right in the middle of a town of, what's your population up there? Like 1.5 million or something?
I think if you consider the whole, you know, Portland metro area, it's like 1.5 million.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot of people. And a big draw, you'd have people coming from a long way away. Yeah. But they haven't been there.
I know talking about PIR, I know one of the problems there, they'd have to make a few safety improvements. But I think the impression I got from some of the things that came out of the Daytona management group was that they were trying to ease their, you know, eligibilities for tracks so they could get to some of these tracks like up in the Northeast or up in the Northwest, which isn't good for the riders because they're basically sacrificing their safety for it. So
yeah,
it's an unfortunate thing. And really to solve this, we just need motorcycle racing to become more popular in the United States, and then that more viewers will be watching it and they'll have more money to build better tracks. And if we can just get, you know, 10 world-class tracks built across this country, you know, that would be awesome.
Sure.
You know, it's frustrating to think that in Great Britain, a little island, they've got like 14 tracks there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They're not all world-class, but they've got 14 tracks on the size of like Virginia.
I don't think it's even that big, but yeah, it's the size of San Bernardino County. But yeah, I agree. And you know how they could make motorcycle racing more popular over here is get more people riding motorcycles. And the way to get more people riding motorcycles is, you know how we have speed limit signs here in the United States where they have a limit for cars and trucks, right, on the freeway. And so typically here in Oregon, at least, the car's speed limit would be 65 and the truck's limits is 55. And this is miles an hour. So if you had a if you had a sign that said motorcycles 115, cars 70, trucks 55, you know, you're going to get a lot more people riding motorcycles, and they're safe. That you can do those speeds on the motorcycle and you're okay, as long as there's not a lot of traffic. You don't want to be weaving in and out of traffic when they're stopped and you're doing 100. That's bad.
Let me ask you this, Bob. A few shows ago, you mentioned something about a ticket or getting out of a ticket. If the speed limit was 115, would you have been safe?
Yes, because I was pulled over doing 104, and I did up my mea culpa. I am an irresponsible, bad man, and all of that. But come on. It was an empty, well, relatively empty freeway. You know, I live in a fairly rural spot, part of Oregon. I got a two-lane in both directions freeway. Yeah, sure, there's a few cars in the right lane, but it's not like I'm weaving in and out of traffic at that speed. And it's not like you doing 104 up there in Portland, which would be flat out impossible. but yes, I was very, very fortunate because apparently they get a little, I call it knee-jerk reactionary, but whatever you want to call it, as soon as you hit that 100-mile-an-hour mark, they get a tad upset.
I'll tell you a story if we have a second.
Go for it.
I was in California, and in California, if you're doing over 100, it's not a speeding ticket. I think it's a felony.
Yeah.
It might be a misdemeanor, but I mean, you have to go to a different court altogether.
Wow.
And I was on my motorcycle one time and going too fast. I was a young kid in college, and I came over a hill. There was a stoplight up ahead, maybe a few hundred yards, and so I started slowing down. And thankfully, because I was slowing down, they only got me doing like 80 or 90 miles an hour, so I didn't have to get that awful three-digit speed limit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this state trooper who was, you know, I think he was actually a rider himself, judging from his sort of attitude. And he was in a plainclothes car, of course. I mean, I got totally popped by some guy I did not recognize. He said that anything over 100 is an automatic, either 6 month or a year license suspension. I couldn't remember exactly what he said here in Oregon. Automatic, just flat out. They take your license away. And to me though, see, those are the laws where you're drawing a line in the sand basically, right? Because 100 miles an hour here is completely different than 100 miles an hour from that Salem to Portland corridor. Completely
sure.
Different.
Right.
And not even counting for the geographical area, let's talk about 80-year-old lady driving a 1983 Chrysler K car, right? Compared to me, okay, I'm 42, relatively quick reaction times, you know, comparatively, and combined with 25 years of driving experience, right? I'm reasonably safe driver. Okay. I go fast, but I'm safe. I'm the same slow speed limit is inflicted on me as on, you know, people that really shouldn't be driving or young kids that don't have the experience.
Yeah. I'm with you.
See? And I mean, but the thing is, you know, there's no way to make, what are you going to do? Have special license plates and stuff? You know, what about happens when Granddad borrows your car, you know? So.
Well, we'll figure something out and put it on a petition.
When I run the country, it's going to be different, Darren, and you're going to want a motorcycle. Trust me. But, you know, this is just the stuff that there's no way around it. And I guess, you know, but I do think, though, that we have a little bit of a knee jerk reaction to speed. You know, speed kills. No, speed doesn't kill. It's that sudden stop when you hit the wall or the bridge or, you know, that kind of thing. And if you're doing it when there's no other traffic around and this and that, that's a whole different ball game than when if you're weaving in and out of rush hour traffic again. And if we were serious here in the United States about reducing traffic congestion and stuff, we would allow lane splitting or filtering, as it's called in other countries, which is not legal except in California here in the United States. If you didn't know that, over for our European and Japanese and whatnot listeners, you cannot, you know, a motorcycle takes up the same amount of road as a car because you're not allowed to ride next to each other and you're not allowed to ride between cars.
I'm all for lane splitting.
Yeah. So we're all over the political side of things, and that's, we digress. But I don't know, anything more about World Super Dupers, or are we about?
No, I guess we've got the times, and it'll be on Sunday, and I'll be waiting and watching, and it'll be a great race, I'm sure, and it'll be a great start to the season. I don't really have a favorite rider that I'm rooting for in World Superbike. I mean, I'm not really a Ben Spies fan. He is an American. I hope, you know, he does well. But,
right.
You know, there's just a lot of names.
You got a lot of good names out there this year, though. There's guys that, you know, if you want to sort of pick to root for, there's Noriyuki Haga, always a good choice. Max Biaggi is fun because he's sort of had a transformation since he moved to World Supers. Shane Byrne is in World Supers. No, he's in British Superbike this year. Who am I thinking of?
Troy Corser, and you're thinking
Troy Corser. Well,
Carlos Checa.
I mean, there's so many names, and who's the British guy? Well, Sykes is one. Sykes is one of the British guys that's going to be a big name in World Supers this year.
Right, yeah. And then also Jonathan Rea.
Yeah, Jonathan Rea. Right. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of, it's going to be good stuff. It really is. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I envy you going up there at Kelly's O. Raise a glass. Say hi to Dave for me. And again, folks, if you are in the greater Northwest area and whatnot and close enough to Portland, you should go.
Yeah, it'd be a great time.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, great. Darren, thanks very much for coming on the show again today. It's always a pleasure having you. I always really enjoy talking with you. And we will talk to you again soon.
All right, Bob. Talk to you later.
Cool. And that's going to do it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much for downloading it. Thanks to Darren for being on the show, especially on very short notice. Now, here we go. Drum roll, please. And of course, you know, as usual, I'd have sound effects if I really, you know, did that sort of thing, but I don't. Let's announce the contest winners for 10 licenses to Adam Kress's really, really cool iPhone/iPod Touch application called Fast App. And this is available at the iTunes App Store. It's a really, really, really cool little thing. But we've got 10 winners here. And they are Brent Clark, Jonas O. Hernandez, Jeff Bertrand, Greg Williams, Adam Silver, Mike Pahalski, Kevin, which I don't have his last name because it's on the email, Timothy McCartney, Todd Podpiscar. Not 100% sure if I'm pronouncing that right. I hope I did not screw it up too much there, Todd. And someone whose email is called The Pod. Not really super helpful. Let's see. Oh, good deal. His first name is Edwin. So we've got, you know, his email is Edwin's Pod. So, Edwin and your pod. That's awesome. And you won the contest. So I'll be sending you guys an email with your licenses very, very shortly. Thanks to everybody for entering. We had a really good turnout. I think Adam was pretty happy with the numbers of people that listened to MotoGPOD and all of that. And thanks a lot to Adam. That was a lot of licenses. I appreciate that a lot. And if you didn't win, you know, sorry, better luck next time and all of that. It's a contest. That's the way it works. But just go to the iTunes App Store. It's $2.99 here in the United States and probably equivalent pricing everywhere else, wherever you can get it. I encourage you to take a look at it. It's really, really cool. It's called Fast App, all one word, Fast App. And that about does it. Oh, one last thing. Do want to send a big, giant shout-out thank you. And I normally do these at the front end of the show, but unfortunately I failed to do so in the intro. So a big shout-out thank you to Mark Manning for sending in a donation to MotoGPOD. Appreciate it. Always good to help with the Skype bill and the internet bill and the beer bill and all of that sort of stuff. And Mark actually gave me official permission to help with the beer bill, so I appreciate that too, Mark. That was actually the last time, because this is Mark's second donation. I should have mentioned that. But on his first donation, very, very nice. He sent me an email and he said, go ahead and spin on beer. So that made me feel better. Whatever. All right. Thanks a lot. Have a super good weekend. Enjoy it. And we've got World Superbikes coming up. So I hope you get a chance to watch that with your friends. If you're in the Portland sort of area, general vicinity, and you want to go, the place is called Kelly's Olympian. And it's on, I believe, 4th and Washington. They have a website. Just Google it. Kelly's Olympian. K-E-L-L-Y apostrophe S Olympian, like Olympics. And, you'll find it. It's a really, really nice place. It's a lot of fun. And they're going to be having the World Superbike races there. Dave Sangster's going to be there. Darren Carpenter's going to be there. All kind of good stuff. So we'll talk to you next week again. And, of course, we'll be talking about World Super Dubers. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.